Chapter 106. The Dowager Mrs. Gowan is reminded that it never dozes, while the waters of Venice and the ruins of Rome were sunning themselves for the pleasure of the Dorrit family, and were daily being sketched out of all earthly proportion, lineament, and likeness, by traveling pencils innumerable. The firm of Doyce and Clennam hammered away in Bleeding Heart Yard, and the vigorous clink of iron upon iron was heard there through the working hours. The younger partner had, by this time, brought the business into sound trim, and the elder, left free to follow his own ingenious devices, had done much to enhance the character of the factory. As an ingenious man, he had necessarily to encounter every discouragement that the ruling powers for a length of time had been able by any means to put in the way of this class of culprits. But that was only reasonable self-defense in the powers, since how to do it must obviously be regarded as the natural and mortal enemy of how not to do it. And this was to be found the basis of the wise system, by tooth and nail upheld by the Circumlocution Office, of warning every ingenious British subject to be ingenious at his peril. Of harassing him, obstructing him, inviting robbers by making his remedy uncertain and expensive, to plunder him, and at the best of confiscating his property after a short term of enjoyment, as though invention were on a par with felony. The system had uniformly found great favor with the barnacles, and that was only reasonable too, for one who worthily invents must be in earnest, and the barnacles abhorred and dreaded nothing half so much. That again was very reasonable, since in a country suffering under the affliction of a great amount of earnestness, there might, in an exceeding short space of time, be not a single barnacle left sticking to a post. Daniel Doyce faced his condition with its pains and penalties attached to it, and soberly worked on for the work's sake. Clennam cheering him with a hearty cooperation was a moral support to him, besides doing good service in his business relation. The concern prospered, and the partners were fast friends. But Daniel could not forget the old design of so many years. It was not in reason to be expected that he should. If he could have lightly forgotten it, he could never have conceived it, or had the patience and perseverance to work it out. So Clennam thought, when he sometimes observed him of an evening looking over the models and drawings, and consoling himself by muttering with a sigh as he put them away again, that the thing was as true as it ever was. To show no sympathy with so much endeavor, and so much disappointment, would have been to fail in what Clennam regarded as among the implied obligations of his partnership. A revival of the passing interest in the subject which had been by chance awakened at the door of the Circumlocution Office, originated in this feeling. He asked his partner to explain the invention to him, having a lenient consideration, apostrophe he stipulated, for my being no workman, Doyce. Apostrophe, no workman? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Doyce. You would have been a thorough workman if you had given yourself to it. You have as good a head for understanding such things as I have met with. Apostrophe, a totally uneducated one, I am sorry to add, apostrophe, said Clennam. I don't know that, apostrophe, returned Doyce, and I wouldn't have you say that. No man of sense who has been generally improved, and has improved himself, can be called quite uneducated as to anything. I don't particularly favor mysteries. I would as soon, on a fair and clear explanation, be judged by one class of man as another, provided he had the qualification I have named. Apostrophe, at all events, apostrophe, said Clennam, this sounds as if we were exchanging compliments, but we know we are not. I shall have the advantage of as plain an explanation as can be given. Apostrophe, well, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Daniel, in his steady even way, I'll try to make it so. Apostrophe, he had the power, often to be found in union with such a character, of explaining what he himself perceived, and meant, with the direct force and distinctness with which it struck his own mind. His manner of demonstration was so orderly, and neat and simple, that it was not easy to mistake him. There was something almost ludicrous in the complete irreconcilability of a vague conventional notion that he must be a visionary man, with the precise, sagacious traveling of his eye and thumb over the plans, their patient stoppages at particular points, their careful returns to other points, whence little channels of explanation had to be traced up, and his steady manner of making everything good, and everything sound at each important stage, before taking his ear on the line's breadth further. His dismissal of himself from his description was hardly less remarkable. He never said, "I discovered this adaptation or invented that combination," but showed the whole thing, as if the divine artificer had made it, and he had happened to find it. So modest he was about it, such a pleasant touch of respect was mingled with his quiet admiration of it, and so calmly convinced he was that it was established on irrefragable laws. Not only that evening, but for several succeeding evenings, Clennam was quite charmed by this investigation. The more he pursued it, and the oftener he glanced at the gray head bending over it, and the shrewd eye kindling with pleasure in it, and love of an instrument for probing his heart, though it had been made for 12 long years, the less he could reconcile it to his younger energy, to let it go without one effort more. At length he said, "Doyce, it came to this at last, that the business was to be sunk with heaven, knows how many more wrecks, or begun all over again." Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, returned Doyce, that's what the nobleman and gentleman made of it after a dozen years. Apostrophe, and pretty fellows too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Clennam, bitterly. The usual thing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed Doyce. I must not make a martyr of myself, when I am one of so large a company. Apostrophe, relinquish it, or begin it all over again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mused Clennam. That was exactly the long and the short of it, apostrophe, said Doyce. Then, my friend, apostrophe, cried Clennam, starting up and taking his work roughened hand, it shall be begun all over again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Doyce looked alarmed, and replied in a hurry for him, no, no. Better put it by. Far better put it by. It will be heard of, one day. I can put it by. You forget, my good Clennam, I have put it by. It's all at an end. Apostrophe, yes, Doyce, apostrophe, returned Clennam, at an end as far as your efforts and rebuffs are concerned, I admit, but not as far as mine are. I am younger than you. I have only once set foot in that precious office, and I am fresh game for them. Come, I'll try them. You shall do exactly as you have been doing, since we have been together. I will add, as I easily can, to what I have been doing, the attempt to get public justice done to you, and, unless I have some success to report, you shall hear no more of it. Apostrophe, Daniel Doyce was still reluctant to consent, and again urged, that they had better put it by. But it was natural that he should gradually allow himself to be over-persuaded by Clennam, and should yield. Yield he did. So Arthur resumed the long and hopeless labor of striving to make way with the Circumlocution Office. The waiting rooms of that department soon began to be familiar with his presence, and he was generally ushered into them by its janitors much as a pickpocket might be shown into a police office. The principal difference being that the object of the latter class of public business is to keep the pickpocket, while the Circumlocution object was to get rid of Clennam. However, he was resolved to stick to the great department, and so the work of form-filling, corresponding, minuting, memorandum-making, signing, countersigning, counter-countersigning, referring backwards and forwards, and referring sideways, crosswise, and zigzag, recommenced. Here arises a feature of the Circumlocution Office, not previously mentioned in the present record. When that admirable department got into trouble, and was, by some infuriated members of Parliament whom the smaller barnacles almost suspected of laboring under diabolic possession, attacked on the merits of no individual case, but as an institution wholly abominable and bedlamite, Then the noble or right honorable barnacle who represented it in the house would smite that member and cleave him asunder with a statement of the quantity of business for the prevention of business done by the circumlocution office. Then would that noble or right honorable barnacle hold in his hand a paper containing a few figures, to which, with the permission of the house, he would entreat its attention. Then would the inferior barnacles exclaim, obeying orders, here, 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 apostrophe and read. Apostrophe then would the noble or right honorable barnacle perceive, sir, from this little document, which he thought might carry conviction even to the perversest mind,
derisive laughter and cheering from the barnacle fry,
that within the short compass of the last financial half year, this much maligned department
cheers,
had written and received 15,000 letters,
loud cheers,
had written 24,000 minutes,
louder cheers,
and 32,517 memoranda,
vehement cheering,
nay, an ingenious gentleman connected with the department, and himself a valuable public servant, had done him the favor to make a curious calculation of the amount of stationery consumed in it during the same period. It formed a part of this same short document, and he derived from it the remarkable fact that the sheets of foolscap paper it had devoted to the public service would pave the footways on both sides of Oxford Street from end to end, and leave nearly a quarter of a mile to spare for the park,
immense cheering and laughter,
while of tape red tape it had used enough to stretch, in graceful festoons, from Hyde Park Corner to the General Post Office. Then, amidst a burst of official exultation, would the noble or right honorable barnacle sit down, leaving the mutilated fragments of the member on the field. No one, after that exemplary demolition of him, would have the hardihood to hint that the more the circumlocution office did, the less was done, and that the greatest blessing it could confer on an unhappy public would be to do nothing. With sufficient occupation on his hands, now that he had this additional task, such a task had many and many a serviceable man died of before his day. Arthur Clennam led a life of slight variety. Regular visits to his mother's dull sick room, and visits scarcely less regular to Mr. Meagles at Twickenham, were its only changes during many months. He sadly and sorely missed little Dorrit. He had been prepared to miss her very much, but not so much. He knew to the full extent only through experience what a large place in his life was left blank when her familiar little figure went out of it. He felt, too, that he must relinquish the hope of its return, understanding the family character sufficiently well to be assured that he and she were divided by a broad ground of separation. The old interest he had had in her, and her old trusting reliance on him, were tinged with melancholy in his mind. So soon had change stolen over them, and so soon had they glided into the past with other secret tendernesses. When he received her letter he was greatly moved, but did not the less sensibly feel that she was far divided from him by more than distance. It helped him to a clearer and keener perception of the place assigned him by the family. He saw that he was cherished in her grateful remembrance secretly, and that they resented him with the jail and the rest of its belongings. Through all these meditations which every day of his life crowded about her, he thought of her otherwise in the old way. She was his innocent friend, his delicate child, his dear little Dorrit. This very change of circumstances fitted curiously in with the habit, begun on the night when the roses floated away, of considering himself as a much older man than his years really made him. He regarded her from a point of view which in its remoteness, tender as it was, he little thought would have been unspeakable agony to her. He speculated about her future destiny, and about the husband she might have, with an affection for her which would have drained her heart of its dearest drop of hope, and broken it. Everything about him tended to confirm him in the custom of looking on himself as an elderly man, from whom such aspirations as he had combated in the case of Minnie Gowan,
though that was not so long ago either, reckoning by months and seasons, were finally departed.
His relations with her father and mother were like those on which a widower son-in-law might have stood.
If the twin sister who was dead had lived to pass away in the bloom of womanhood, and he had been her husband, the nature of his intercourse with Mr. and Mrs. Meagles would probably have been just what it was. This imperceptibly helped to render habitual the impression within him that he had done with and dismissed that part of life. He invariably heard of Minnie from them, as telling them in her letters how happy she was, and how she loved her husband. But inseparable from that subject, he invariably saw the old cloud on Mr. Meagles' face. Mr. Meagles had never been quite so radiant since the marriage as before. He had never quite recovered the separation from Pet. He was the same good-humored, open creature, but as if his face, from being much turned towards the pictures of his two children which could show him only one look, unconsciously adopted a characteristic from them, it always had now, through all its changes of expression, a look of loss in it. One wintry Saturday when Clennam was at the cottage, the Dowager Mrs. Gowan drove up, in the Hampton Court equipage which pretended to be the exclusive equipage of so many individual proprietors. She descended, in her shady ambuscade of green fan, to favor Mr. and Mrs. Meagles with a call. "And how do you both do, Papa and Mama Meagles?" apostrophe apostrophe said she, encouraging her humble connections. "And when did you last hear from her about my poor fellow?" Apostrophe apostrophe, my poor fellow was her son, and this mode of speaking of him politely kept alive, without any offense in the world, the pretense that he had fallen a victim to the Meagles' wiles. "And the dear pretty one?" apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Gowan. "Have you later news of her than I have?" Apostrophe apostrophe, which also delicately implied that her son had been captured by mere beauty, and under its fascination, had foregone all sorts of worldly advantages. Apostrophe I am sure, apostrophe said Mrs. Gowan, without straining her attention on the answers she received, it's an unspeakable comfort to know they continue happy. My poor fellow is of such a restless disposition, and has been so used to roving about, and to being inconstant and popular among all manner of people, that it's the greatest comfort in life. I suppose they're as poor as mice, Papa Meagles? Apostrophe, Mr. Meagles, fidgety under the question, replied, I hope not, ma'am. I hope they will manage their little income. Apostrophe, oh, my dearest Meagles. Apostrophe returned the lady, tapping him on the arm with the green fan, and then adroitly interposing it between the young and the company. How can you, as a man of the world and one of the most businesslike of human beings, for you know you are businesslike, and a great deal too much for us who are not apostrophe, which went to the former purpose, by making Mr. Meagles out to be an artful schemer. Apostrophe, how can you talk about their managing their little means? My poor dear fellow, the idea of his managing hundreds, and the sweet pretty creature too, the notion of her managing, Papa, Gutenberg edition, end of chapter.